Alright, welcome back to Radio Wasteland, and our guest tonight is T. Fox Dunham, author and general paranormal fan. Do I call you T. Fox? I think it's a great nickname.
What oh, you can just call me Fox. Fox is fine.
Alright. T. Fox, though, it sounds like some sort of like, you know, somewhere between Animal Crossing and rap.
Yeah, I was gonna say, sounds like a rapper, which is...
Right, well, T-Fox. Yeah.
Probably the least thing that I am. Well, hello, Kara. Hello, Chauncey. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no problem. Great. It's great to have you on again. You know, yours is a name that, even though it's been a long time since we had you on last, it's a name that we run across quite a bit through our social media and Para-X and all that stuff. So, our topic tonight is talking about the new book that you have curated. Coming Through in Waves, Crime Fiction Inspired by the Songs of Pink Floyd.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the two main questions are why crime fiction and why Pink Floyd, but let's start with crime fiction. You know, why, you know, how'd you get peaked out in crime fiction? It is very much its own scene of fiction that has its own level of diehards. You know, how'd you get in there?
I have to admit something to you. I'm a bit of a mafia addict when it comes to reading mafia stories in history or watching mafia movies or documentaries. To me, the stories of the various mafia figures are quite Shakespearean. And we don't really have modern tales of the fall of kings anymore. But if you look to the stories of gangs like the Italian mafia, and there are many other different kinds of organized crime families out there, you can still see these heroic, tragic tales of the falls of kings happening even today. And you sort of, and we don't realize it, but we're actually living in a country that's full of these sub-kingdoms across the country ruled by these various warlords that live in this other world that we sort of orbit around and hope we never travel into. And I just found that very compelling. So, you know, I love to write what I enjoy reading and studying, and it just sort of fused together for me in a very happy way.
You know, I think you just sold it to me. I've always found it somewhat interesting, and I wasn't sure exactly why, but yeah, you're right. The sort of shogun-y, sort of city-state battle situation is exactly what that is, isn't it? Oh, that is interesting. Huh. I love it. I don't know. We live in a society that's been very... inundated with crime fiction from TV shows like CSI and all this stuff. You know, it's all over the place. And I was trying to see what my love of it was. And one of my loves of it, especially with like, Elmore Leonard and Quentin Tarantino later, is they sort of create this sort of fictional world that I'm assuming doesn't really exist, where it's all, retro, interracial and all this stuff where, Elmore Leonard was really most famous for doing this stuff of having these sort of interracial, larger-than-life characters that really ran into one another that maybe wouldn't have run into each other in real life. And then moving on from that, you know, why specifically Pink Floyd as the inspiration?
Well, let me jump back in time a year, and this is just when the pandemic was getting going, and my wife and I had just moved to the lovely yet sedate city of Lancaster out of Philly. That was quite the jump. I got an email from my first real novel editor, Matt Lewis, over at Gutter Books. He had published my first book, my first foray into novel writing, The Street Martyr, and I had not heard from him for years, ever since he flew me out to San Francisco and had a release party there, and he sort of had left the field for a while, but he was doing these books based on, like Pink Floyd, like the Coming Through in Waves, where he was taking bands and music and connecting them to crime noir stories. And he wanted to do another one, and he said, well, you know what? I haven't spoken to Fox for a while. It'd be nice to reconnect. Let's see if he'll do the book. And we got into this conversation about what the book should be. And, you know, there's always this argument over authors need to be paid, and some publishers are okay just sort of accepting stories and giving them credit. So I said, I'll do it, Matt. And I've never edited an anthology before, but I know many editors who have. And the ones who hadn't shot themselves had, you know, bemoaned to me over liquor many nights. They wish they'd never gone and done it. So I was hesitant because you really want to do your own work. But I said, okay, Matt, I'll do it. But we need to send the proceeds to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Of course, I'm a cancer patient off and on for the last 20 years, starting with lymphoma. So I said, I'll put my heart into this and deal with the struggle and the pressure and, you know, the late night, thinking of, you know, just sort of running away and getting away from all this work and changing my name to Hemingway and starting as a new author again, if we can donate that, you know, the proceeds to that. And he said it was a great idea. And I knew many authors would be interested in supporting that with their work. And I just love it when you can bring together something you love for a good cause. So I was there and he said, okay, what band? And I was like, oh dear, he's going to have to lock me down to a band. I'm very eclectic in my musical tastes. I couldn't really say something like the Chieftains. I didn't think they'd go for that, or something New Age, or even Mumford and Sons. I wanted to broaden out the music a little bit to give my potential authors plenty of options to pick from. And going back a couple of decades, and I thought, you know what? I've always loved The Wall. I've always loved Pink Floyd. I think that would speak to many of the different generations of crime authors we have. So, sure, why not? Pink Floyd. And we were off.
Mm-hmm. So what were the instructions? You know, are you pick a song, pick a line, pick an album? You know, what if two people, let me not get ahead. Is it pick a song, pick a line, or pick an album?
It was very much, we put out the request on various submission sites, Facebook, Doetrip, I believe, had it go up. And we said, okay, when you get an idea for a story, contact the editor, me. Tell me which song you want to use. Give me a little bit about your story, and I'll lock it in. I had the spreadsheet going. So they would pick a song, and then somebody else would try, and I'd say, I'm sorry, that song has already been taken. And every week or two, I would publish the list of songs that had been taken. And we'd sort of negotiate. And now, here's something funny for you. By the time we were done, Matt said, oh, you'll get 20, 25 authors, I'm sure. That'll be it. And it won't take very long to edit. I got 70 authors who wanted to submit work for a anthology that needed stories that were about 1,000 to 3,000 words in length. And I could do about 20 stories. So.
Wow. So you got yourself a sequel, basically.
Indeed.
Yeah, that's what I was my second question I was going to get to. It's like when you had competing song titles, you know. So here's a question that I got about editing an anthology. When I first started writing, my wife was doing some of the editing for me. And mostly just spelling and stuff, but she had a hell of a time like getting to artistic prose and saying like this should be reworded and that should be reworded. I'm assuming you got less pushback on this one because it was for a good cause, but do you get pushback when trying to fix somebody's work?
You know, it's funny. I was worried about that. I thought to myself, what right do I have to edit their work? And then wait. I'm the editor. No,
I have all the power.
All the power, exactly. Then, boy, did I not want that power for. So I would work with the. There were many stories that I just rejected right away. They were all missing something, like they were missing a chord in the song, or missing a beat of the heart, or they would set up a surprise that they didn't build at the beginning. Like you can't just have sort of a Deus Ex Machina twist at the end. You need to have a moment where the reader's going, oh yeah, he did say that at the start. We can go back and sort of set up that way.
Tailgate Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Albee from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
Spring savings now at Quick and Clean Car Wash at the corner of Market and Eureka Way next to Dutch Bros in downtown Reading. Buy 5 car wash coupons and get one free, or buy 10 and get 3 free. Spring on over for savings at Quick and Clean Car Wash. Car wash coupons are a great gift or for your car or truck. Quick and Clean Car Wash next to Dutch Bros at the corner of Market and Eureka Way, downtown Reading. Quick and clean.
A building that's meant to last is not built overnight. And for centuries, the cornerstone has been crucial to guide each brick and wall that comes after. A strong community relies on many cornerstones. So at Cornerstone Community Bank, we've taken our name to heart. Whether it's your business or your family, we'll provide the financial cornerstone that you need to build on. We're local. We're community. We're your cornerstone. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
As restrictions continue to be lifted in Shasta County, many businesses are set to reopen, and KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and KCNR1460.com wants to help spread the word. So, if you are reopening your business, planning on opening a business for the first time, or are already open for business, KCNR has many advertising packages to choose from. Give us a call at 530-605-4565 and talk to a KCNR representative today. That's 530-605-4565.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts Wayne Carpenter and Terry Raposa. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archives link.
ACA, come out and play. Have you seen the bill we all have to pay? The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Celebrate the Papa Bear in your life. The popular Big Daddy Burger is back at Black Bear Diner. This massive burger sports 2 10-ounce patties and a 6-inch sesame seed bun. Add 2 onion rings, a fried egg, bacon, cheese, pickles, lettuce, tomato, mayo, and dressing, and well, you've got a burger challenge. Want the Big Daddy but can't tackle the mountain? Try the new Little Daddy. Get both this month only at Black Bear Diner on Hilltop Drive in Reading, or order for carryout or delivery at blackbeardiner.com.
Black Bear Diner.
Radio Wasteland comes to you from the Reading studios of Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM and AM 1460. Visit Radio Wasteland at Instagram at instagram.com/Radio Wasteland.
The stories I picked out just sung to me. Like, they just had that certain X factor that I can't quite explain, that I hear editors saying that always very frustrating to me before. It didn't have that X factor. Well, didn't have Y, Z, and B, and D. That was just not the heart, not the core. And then as I worked with them, I gave them my best. I mean, I really poured my editing skill and years of editing my work onto their stories. And what I wanted to win them over with my arguments and by showing them how incredible their story could be. And you know what? I did not have one moment of pushback. They read the edits and they responded. And they said, wow, you really brought this together, or you really made this story whole, or you saw the parts of the vision that I was missing, and you really helped make this a great story. Now, here's the thing. All the stories I rejected, and there were about 50, I felt so bad rejecting them because I have been on that end so many times. No matter how successful you are, you still get rejected. So I wrote them personalized critiques of every story, which I can tell you took me 6 months. But they were so pleased to get the response that I actually got thank yous for the rejections.
Yeah.
So, So I had a
it's
great
a trick
experience.
I need to learn.
Yes, tell me about it. It's something I'm sure that as I'm playing, the odds would not keep happening over time.
Right. And how do you find these authors? You know, is it you that's putting it out there? So when they come to you and they say, hey, we want to do this book, here's the title. Do they say, we're going to get a bunch of authors and you're going to figure it out? Or is it up to you to go out and get them?
We put up the submission guidelines that I helped write, because sometimes submission guidelines can be missing certain elements that are needed, like shun format, double space, things like that often get missed. And also guidelines, things like I wanted fun stories. I wanted stories that made you laugh. I didn't want anything harsh. I didn't want any kind of torture. Definitely no sexual assault in any kind of way. I wanted people to enjoy the stories that they were reading and not feel that darkness or that horror. So we made sure to put that all up in the submission guidelines. And then it just got spread around. Like, we put it up on Facebook. It got spread around the crime community, the noir community. Various people were asking me about it, and they would let their authors know. And also various writing groups, say in England, Scotland, even like in Australia, a couple Australian authors contacted me and wanted some more information. And then they said they were going to spread the guidelines to their authors. So once we planted that seed, the stories just, you know, the requests just started coming in. And then the stories started coming in. And I felt quite overwhelmed for a time. I had to keep several databases and spreadsheets so that I would show the authors the attention, the appreciation that they deserved as professionals, especially submitting to a charity anthology for which they would receive no pay.
Right.
Right.
You know, I didn't think about the sort of horror factor. And I get what you're going for, because you were looking for something pulpy, something noir, something not horrific. Did you get a lot of those ended up being submitted anyway, or were people pretty generally good about following those guidelines?
Mostly they were generally pretty good. But I did get some shock stories that definitely did not fit the guidelines, and some of them scared me a little bit, to be honest. I don't know. People sometimes will mistake shock horror for a good story, and they'll want to make it as shocking as they can without that narrative to go with it. And some of these, I'm definitely not going to say who, but I was just like, these are just sadistic stories that definitely don't belong. You know, especially when you've got an anthology that people will be reading in support of charity.
Right.
You know.
Thank I had you for your submission. I'm calling the police.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Oh, were you there that night? Oh, I.
Exactly.
And so what about you? Do you have a story in here? I know you're a writer in your own regard.
In my own regard, indeed. yes, I do, but it wasn't contingent on that. I wrote the intro because I wanted to tell my story. I wanted to tell the story about how I found a golf ball sized lymph node behind my ear one night after shaving, so I knew it wasn't there. And then it was about an hour later as I was watching a wonderful episode of Deep Space Nine, my absolute favorite. And then that led me to this wild and insane world of chemotherapy and doctors and severe radiation. And my oncologist comes in to tell me that the treatment has a rather low chance of working. And did I just want to spend the next couple of years with my family instead of going through this? And then what came after the post-cancer world, the disability, the wheelchair that eventually I shrugged off, and just the pain that I had suffered and how important it was, especially in this time of pandemic and COVID, very serious, very important. Mm-hmm. We lost wonderful people in the human race, and everyone's needed. And it's just a shame what happened. And it was very important we fought that. But we also can't let the urgent overshadow the important, because charities like the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society lost a lot of funding over the last year. And many of them are looking ahead, figuring out how to survive.
Mm. So. That makes a lot of sense. You know, all the money has been focused towards something else at that point, huh?
So I did decide to include a brief story. And there are cases where have been editors in the past who have founded anthologies only to get their own work published when they failed many other times. So there's a lot of controversy with this. Should editors put their own work into it? So what I did was I wove my story into the introduction. And at first, this is an interesting story. At first, I was going through a battle with Social Security at the time, with disability, especially with the last administration. They tried to kick a lot of people off for unlawful reasons. And so I had a lawyer at the time. So I wrote this story about what was happening at Social Security and about some of the politics that were happening, a lot of people being thrown off that shouldn't have been. It was definitely political. I was rather angry at the time, and I sent it to the publisher at Gutter Books, Matt, and he said, "Fox, I can't use this story. It's too political. I know some authors right away that are going to be very angry at this." And I went, "Oh, Matt, you know what? I was upset. I was angry at SSA, and you know what? If I were the editor, I wouldn't have accepted this story either." So we pushed that aside. And then I did another one about a young man who's trying to get medication for his mom who's dying of cancer in Philly, and she doesn't have good insurance, and he's taken to stealing this medication. And the whole time it's happening between these two walls at Penn, so I based it on the song, The Wall. So I do have a story in the anthology, though it's only 2,000 words long.
You know, that answered my next question, your explanation there. My next question was like, do you edit yourself, but instead you send it to your higher up to get the approval? You know, because like, how do you set yourself aside and be all, this is the best story. This one is the one for the thing. But, you know, I never thought about it, the people putting together anthologies to just get their own story out there.
It did happen.
Oh, I'm sure it happens all the time. Yeah, I'm sure it happens all the time. That makes a lot of, I mean, it's a smart move. You know, I can't come down on it. So what range are we dealing with, mostly like tech detectives?
Well, this is a wonderful story. You know, I interview a lot of people myself, and I find there are two ways of people answer questions. Sometimes they answer very briefly and succinctly, and sometimes they tell long stories that answer four or five questions. So I'm going to try to get in the middle somewhere with this as I proceed, just going over my own protocol. So I was going for variety. I wanted a box of chocolate crime, kidnapping, crime family stories. Of various types, mostly robbery stories, or there were a couple stories about a murder that happened years ago and a person was still running. But I wanted a nice variety of stories. I wanted lots of different characters that are generating various crimes that are going on. Some of them were a little darker. Some of them were sort of that bumbling criminal story with somehow they make out at the end with robbing the bank and they have no idea how they did it. There was one cool story about a gentleman who was hallucinating. That was a great story in the beginning. In fact, I put it right up front called Come In 51, Your Time Is Up by D.B. Schalcher. And if you read the story, it's almost surreal the way it happens.
Aloha, this is Kevin, operations manager at Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. A professionally cleaned business sends a message to your paying customers. It says you are a company that cares about your image and always presenting the very best impression. Time after time, I've talked to clients who shopped for the lowest price and after a few months realized that their professional image was suffering. They didn't know who was actually coming into their offices to do the cleaning, and they just weren't getting the value they were paying for. Be wary of big-name companies that take your money, then hire unknown contractors to do the work. Since 1987, Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, your local professionals, have been offering the best in office cleaning by our screened, bonded, and insured staff. Take pride in your business and say aloha to your customers with the professional cleaning services from Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. Call 221-5868, 221-5868, MauiBob'sOfficeCleaning.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with a promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with a promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Today, Simpson University continues to provide a Christ-centered education, graduating students with mature and infectious faith, critical competence, and a ready spirit to thrive as servant leaders around the world and at our backyard. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
A Moment in History by KCNR and historian Donnie Smith. The town of Delta was established by the California and Oregon Railroad in 1884 at the confluence of the Sacramento River and Dog Creek. Railroad officials turned the site into a temporary railhead terminal, laid out a town site, and gave it a more dignified name of Delta because of the similarities of the town site terrain and the Greek letter Delta. Reading and Shasta merchants flocked to the area to open stores, believing it would be another red-hot railhead town like Reading. Delta soon thrived, but almost disappeared as fast as it had appeared. What little remained became a stopover for steam engines to take on water for the rest of the climb through the canyon. Delta still exists today as a very small, quiet community. This moment in history was brought to you by KCNR and Shasta County historian Dottie Smith. For more stories like this, find Dottie Smith on Amazon or at the Shasta Historical Society.
You're listening to Chauncey and Kara on Radio Wasteland right here on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. That's Free Fire Radio. And don't forget to follow Radio Wasteland on Facebook at facebook.com/radiowasteland.us.
This guy's in jail. He doesn't know why he's in jail. And they keep getting his name wrong. And by the end of the story, his identity has sort of switched with this other person in jail's identity. And the whole story is sort of counted with a beat, the sort of sound the plumbing is making. And it was very rhythmic and hypnotic. And then I ended the story with a wonderful tale from a friend from Australia. And it's a story that's sort of set in the afterlife with God and creation and the devil. And it's sort of this odd other crime story about a heist that happens in the afterlife. And I really enjoyed putting that one in by Paul Mannering in Australia. So if you read it, you're not going to find any story is quite the same. They all have very different characters and very different themes. And that was something I was very lucky to get from my talented cadre of authors.
Yeah. I'm curious, with your knowledge of like real life mafia stories and history and so on, did you ever get a story and think, oh, that's very much like this thing that actually happened? Or, you know, I'm just wondering how, like, your knowledge sort of informed the editing process.
There were a couple of stories about an English crime family, like going back to the Crays, that did remind me of the Cray family and some of the heists and some of the sort of collection operations that they had going on in the streets of London. But most of the stories, besides the ones with the English crime family, were just sort of about individual characters who are planning a heist or had murdered somebody or were coming home from jail. And a lot of them, there were really a lot of mafia stories in the book.
Interesting. Okay. So less organized crime and more, you know, individual.
Noir, yeah, right, right.
Which I think is maybe more Pink Floyd anyway.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah, the subject matter.
Are there any Pink Floyd songs that didn't make it in there that you would have swore would?
You know, come to think about it, you know, it's funny you asked me that. I'm thinking back to the songs. Let me look over my list. There were a lot of the optimistic songs that never made it in. From like The Division Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like Learning to Fly, I believe this, I can't quite remember the title, but, many of the optimistic music that came from, like albums like The Division Bell never got in, so. But songs like Heartbeat Pig Meat by Kenneth W. Kane, who wrote a very interesting story about a sort of labyrinth and a sort of minotaur maze going on that was really interesting. Or, my co-host Phil Thomas, of course, grabbed Hey You from The Wall, which is one of my favorite songs, and did a nice job with that. Or
I assume The Wall and Dark Side got most of them.
They did indeed. They did indeed, yeah. So
those are the ones I know, so.
Yeah. Exactly, so I'm very happy about that.
Yeah.
If you're going back to the Sid Barrett days, I'm not going to know what you're talking about.
So. Oh, yeah, what was the one that was all piano, black cover with, like, white and blue and red bars, and it's pretty much all piano songs.
No, I think I've ignored that one, so I'm not sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a weird one. You know, you got to be a fan. You got to be a fan to get to some of them. So did it prompt the idea of doing this with other bands? I mean, how has the backlash been? Has it been positive? Well, let me ask you this first. Is there a backlash from the band? Is that the sort of – is this the sort of thing where the band could take issue with it?
Well, the publisher did a lot of research on this when they started, and it turns out that the song titles, he says, can't be copyrighted. They can be used in stories, just not the lyrics. So we were very, very careful to eliminate any of the lyrics that showed up in the story itself. But I would hope that I did it respectfully and tastefully enough as an homage, as a declaration of love to Pink Floyd and the many stories that they have inspired. And that's actually one of the reasons I wanted this to be a charity anthology, was because I didn't feel right profiting off their creative, you know, their art and their music.
So has there been any throw out basically like, hey, here's another band we should do?
You know, there's been several requests to the publisher after the book, you know, came out to try to get it. And Matt, I think, is probably looking forward to doing it in a year or two. And I've certainly had people going, hey, Fox, did you contact the editor and tell him I'd be great, I'd like to do it about this band?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Aerosmith or AC/DC or a couple of more. Yeah,
Aerosmith one would be gross.
Yeah, there were a couple ones. And I just sort of said, here's the email, the editor. You go ahead and shake his tree with this, because I am out, baby.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. I say Aerosmith would be gross because it's a running joke around here. My daughter always forgets his name, like whenever he comes on and stuff. And she just refers to him as the dirty guy because she thinks he looks dirty. Not like sexually dirty, but like physically dirty. She thinks he looks dirty. And, so he's, yeah. So if there's a Ramones one, give me a call. Take that to your editor.
I will. I'll send you the email.
Oh, no. I'm out. okay, this is totally off topic, but I am going to have to address this with you.
Please.
Deep Space Nine is your favorite? That's like totally my least favorite of all Star Trek.
Not yet. Okay, it is my favorite. And,
what's up with that?
I don't know. I just like the freedom that they had in the writing, and I know that it was the first series that jumped off the Roddenberry, where the Federation could never be in a war, and they'd all be individual episodes. And I don't know, I was just very fond of the characters in Deep Space Nine, especially the character of Garak, played by Andrew Robinson.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and Garak is definitely a keeper.
It was the episode, The Die Is Cast, where he was going with a Nabrentane to attack the Dominion, but the whole thing had been a trap created by the Founders. And that was the episode I was watching at 11 o'clock at night. I just shaved. I was getting ready to go back to high school after having Lyme disease for 6 months that had taken me out. I'm an avid fisher angler, so sooner or later we all get Lyme disease. And that's when I just shaved right here, so I knew it was flat. And as I was watching the show, and it was that wonderful scene where the Founders attacked the Cardassian Romulan fleet, and as I was checking to make sure I got all the hairs on my chin, I suddenly found this golf ball. I mean, it was a golf ball, and it had grown in about, probably about half an hour from nothing. Goodness. And it's like a switch that goes on, and you touch it, and I was just like, okay, I have a mass. I thought it was an inflamed tooth. I called a doctor the next day and said I should come in, and he said, oh, it's probably just a cyst. You're probably just exaggerating it. And I sat in that waiting room the next day, and he took me back, and he's like, okay, so where is it? He's like, okay, so it's probably just a cyst. It's probably just an, he just stopped talking. Oh, it's going to be right here. I'm sure it's, then silence. And in that silence, I was like, oh no, I'm in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And 2 days later, they cut it out. Major surgery. They removed a lot of my salivary glands, my parotid gland. I'm missing part of my jaw over here. Fortunately, the doctor was also a gifted plastic surgeon, so he rebuilt a lot of my face, just a little scar back here. And then it took them 2 months to even figure out what it was, because it was such a rare form of lymphoma. It was I actually got lymphoma twice in the same tumor. It was Hodgkin's, which is pretty treatable, but then it was also large cell, which is basically a death sentence. So, and that began my trip into chemotherapy. I had very heavy chop treatments. Your hair falls out. It's a weird thing to wake up in the morning and sort of rub your head and your eyebrows come out your hands. I know it sounds weird. In fact, I just told the story to a friend of mine, Jesse, who I've been meeting at night to play Dungeons and Dragons online. He's a good friend that I just met in Louisiana. He's doing great. And he was talking about we were talking about our long hair, and my hair at that time was down to my middle back. I just let it grow out. I planned to, you know, let it keep growing for the next 10 years. And when the doctor told me I would need to have chemo, my first thought wasn't, oh my God, I'm going to die, or, oh God, what's chemo going to do, or radiation. It was, my hair! No! Oh, yeah. Oh God!
My glorious hair!
Yep. And it all fell out. It was, we cut off the back of it, and then my white count died from the chemotherapy. It's what it does. It kills fast-growing cells. And they put me in reverse isolation so no one could touch me in the hospital. And it happened quickly, so I was not able to shave my head. And with chemo, it's most people think radiation makes your hair fall out, and it does. But chemo actually is what does it for cancer patients. And it doesn't just sort of all fall off in your hand. It tugs on there. So within a day, as I'm rubbing my head about, my bed was covered in hair. And I was going crazy. I was like, let me out of here. This is driving me nuts. Please do something. And finally, my oncologist said, screw it. He went in with a pair of nursing shears and just started cutting it off for me.
Oh, well, that's nice. Was there any any connection between the cancer and the Lyme disease, or was that purely coincidental?
If anything, I was going to get the cancer eventually, but the Lyme disease and the antibiotic treatment that I had for it with picked lines and intravenous probably suppressed my immune system enough that it let the cancer run free. So I didn't get Lyme disease and then it gave me cancer. It was just a tragic circumstance.
It caused the cancer to grow faster because of what it had done to your immune system.
Basically, yeah, it was, yeah.
At Shasta Regional Medical Group, we're focused on the health matters that matter to you, like having a primary care doctor you trust. Our physicians put patients first. They take the time to listen to your needs and concerns, and they provide the information you need to make good decisions about your own health. At Shasta Regional Medical Group, you have an integrated network of caregivers and specialists working to serve you in a compassionate, patient-centered environment. We're conveniently located right across the street from Shasta Regional Medical Center. To make an appointment, call Shasta Regional Medical Group today at 605-4260 or visit us online at ShastaRegionalMedicalGroup.com. Shasta Regional Medical Group. Your primary care is our primary concern.
Hi, this is Senior Chief Rob Burrows with the Northern California Veterans Museum and Heritage Center, and I am your host every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 with Battlefield Expressions. Battlefield Expressions is where we talk about veterans issues, advocacy for our community, and those in our community who help support our veterans. Once again, join me every Saturday morning from 9 to 11, Battlefield Expressions on KCNR 96.5 and 1460 AM.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
You're listening to Free Fire Radio, 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. You're listening to Radio Wasteland with Chauncey and Kara. Find all our shows and archives by visiting Radio Wasteland at radiowasteland.us.
And a lot of the disease that comes from the body is like cancer. Cancer itself is caused by in many cases, cellular division, and there's this one gene that that scientists can turn up, and it causes your body to reproduce cells more, and cells divide faster, and you live longer, but you develop cancer almost immediately, and then they turn it down, and your lifespan's a lot shorter, but you're basically cancer-free. So nature, we've evolved in balance. We've evolved with these different systems at war with each other, like the way an immune system can turn into lupus or MS, or the way your own systems can suddenly start attacking each other. In certain cases, pregnant women have their own children, their own fetuses killed by their own immune systems, and it's a terrible disease. So what happened to me was just what I call it's what I call the price. It's the cost of doing business. Is that if we're going to be here on this earth and we're going to be alive, we have to take the chance that our systems can break down. That's basic thermodynamics. That's the first law of the universe. As far as I'm concerned, it's God. And I'm very comforted when I think of that. And then the next day, I'm feeling sorry for myself and attacked. And, you know, so again, I still haven't quite gotten there, And again, it's that those different systems competing with each other, those different mindsets and influences. And in the end, you know, is that really important? Or the story I wrote, is that important? Or the dinner I just made for my wife, that's important. And every day getting up and fighting that particular day. And I don't know. In the end, it's all ash.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's good parenting on my part, but that's what I've always told my kids is they're just all this. What should I do? This, that, or the other thing? And I tell them, you know, ultimately, I don't think anything matters other than what you decide matters. So decide that something matters so that you can do something with your life. Because ultimately, you know, what matters, it either nothing matters or it's beyond our comprehension. You know, you go ahead and decide what matters to you, and then you do your best to make that happen. You know,
most important thing in this life is love.
Yeah. So doing all this, speaking of loves in life, you know, doing all this editing for Coming Through in Waves, did it put your own artistic efforts on the back burner for months? It sounds like.
Yes, it did. I am actually pretty disabled, and that's something I don't really talk about because there are editors and there are people out there who look at their plans and they look at books they want to get out, and they some of them do look at me and go, well, I'm worried he's not going to deliver, or I'm worried he's not going to be able to do the promotion like I need him to do. So again, that's something that I, especially when I go to conventions and stuff, I hide a lot of it. But yes, to do the anthology, I was supposed to do it in like 3 or 4 months. And I told Matt, I said, it could take a lot longer, especially when you had 70 submissions come in.
Sure.
So yes, there were a lot of times where I'm like, I committed to doing this, and there were stories I wanted to write, but I only had the energy that day or that week to edit this, you know, anthology, but I made a commitment. And you know what? If it kills me, I finish my commitments, and that's how I protected my reputation.
So are you getting back to work? What are you
working
on?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
What are you working on? What can we see from you then?
Well, I have been looking for motives. I had a pretty nasty kidney infection the last few months. And between that and a rather harsh reaction I had to the vaccine, which I'm also not telling people about because they need to get the vaccine, you're going to get some side effects. But it's nothing compared to what COVID will do to you. And it did make me pretty sick. But of course, that's a special condition because of my weakened immune system. But I've been rebuilding myself from these various illnesses I've had over the last few months. And I have been doing historic fiction, which I just love writing. I'm the guy that will sit up all night reading a book of English history about the dissolution of the monasteries by Cromwell and King Henry VIII. And I'm like, okay, where do they send the funds now? Oh, the villages no longer had the alms, so they had to start working out a budget for it. You know, I just love the detail, and I love digging deep into so many different historic elements. So the last couple of months, I've been writing historic crime fiction. Like, I did a piece based on Nicodemo Scarpa, who was the crime lord of Philadelphia, the New Jersey Philadelphia crime family from the 80s, for Mango Press, for Mitzi Sorrento and her new book coming out on crime stories. And that was a wonderful piece to do. And I did a lot of research into Philly in the 80s. And then I moved on to a story about Queen Elizabeth. And she was 2 years into her reign. She was in love with Robert Dudley, who, of course, was married to Amy Dudley. And 2 years into their reign, as they were discussing divorce and marriage, Amy Dudley was found at the bottom of the stairs of her friend's house, dead with a broken neck. And, of course, it was a major scandal and a murder mystery that's never been solved. So I had a lot of fun digging into Elizabethan history and characters like Lester, or wasn't the Earl Lester, then Robert Dudley, and Elizabeth Tudor, and just wonderful crime figures like the great spy master. I can't think of his name all of a sudden, but like Lord Burghley, and just the various characters in the story. Now I'm moving on to, I've made some arrangements with another publisher to do some stories about Sherlock Holmes, set in Victorian England, leading up to 1922. My story involves the Naval Limitation Treaty in 1922. All the different governments got together and said, we're going to cut our, you know, cut our tonnage to be this, and we're only going to have these kind of battleships and aircraft carriers. At the time, it was like Salt One, Salt Two, because naval ships in 1922, navies were going to cause the next world war, just like in the 60s, it was nuclear weapons. So I'm having a lot of fun reading Sherlock Holmes and studying Victorian London and Edwardian London later on, and of course into the 1920s. And so basically I'm focused on historic fiction right now and combining it with crime stories and just having fun.
Huh, that sounds really cool. Very, very cool. Well, we're not too far away from the end here. You know, where's the best place for somebody to get the book coming through in waves?
Oh, just go over to Amazon.
Amazon?
Amazon is the mecca of writers and models.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.